League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hello, welcome back, everybody, to another year of the Sunday Podcast.
I'm Ollie Lum.
And I'm Matt Seddon.
Back in 2025 for our fifth season. You can expect more of this.
He's claiming that he was ill before the semifinal, whatever. But, you know, I just feel like at that point he was just looking for attention.
And some of this.
Well, you normally say no human is limited. So I can't limit myself, or I can't just say I can do.
As well as event coverage around all the major races on the UK circuit.
And if you're a fan of the pod, please give us a rating and review on your preferred podcast streaming service.
And if you want to stay up to date with all the latest news, give us a follow on Instagram at Sunday Podcast.
As always, thanks for listening. See you next time. And we hope you enjoyed the episode.
Okay, guys, welcome to another episode. Andrew Koskaran on the podcast today. I'm obviously competing today in the 3000 at a European Indoors. But we hope anyway, we're recording this on a Saturday. So we hope he got through his heat. We're sure he will have done. So you can look forward to watching his race later today, and obviously listening to him talk a couple of weeks ago as well.
Yeah, man. Great guest. I think one which is a little bit overdue, to be honest. But obviously now he's made that move to New Balance Manchester, training with Westy, training with Clitheroe. Yeah, I think it was good to catch up. And the biggest thing for me with Koskaran, kind of briefly mentioned it the other day as well, is how he's been very adaptable and he's put himself in a lot of different setups. But then he's been able to know almost when the time's up in each training group and just be like, I need to go find something else. And it sounds like, I mean, from the podcast, he really knows his body. He talks about where double threshold, the kind of level that got him to, and now he's sort of changed and moved away from it, and now he's starting to really reap the benefits, yeah, with his impressive 7:30 indoors and the win there and the shape he's in. And, you know, he's a guy who's had guidance from, you know, Phelan Kelly, who we know from the Dublin Track Club, and obviously Nick Bordeaux as well. He's been in those scenarios. But then he talks about their superpowers, you know, Phelan, very motivational. Nick, obviously, great coach. But then is Nick Bordeaux's training, just, is it a little bit outdated now? You know, you look at the sport and the fact that, you know, when these guys were really, really in their best shape, like people like Stewie, 2018, 2019, just sort of, you know, in and around pre-pandemic and post-pandemic, the sort of whole, the sport wasn't where it is today. We didn't have as many people doing the high volumes of double threshold, and which is effectively what Nick Bordeaux and co do, you know, all those K reps, but they just don't do them in the morning and evening like most people out there. So, but I thought he was really interesting in the way that he has moved through and worked with many different coaches, and the reasoning for that I think is interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you say, he's worked with different coaches, decided that it's time to move on, and he's leveled up. He's not just
leveled up, yeah.
He's not just run quick at 22, 23, coming out of college and then stayed at a similar level. Like, the guy has made some serious jumps later into his 20s, which, like you say, must clearly know his body well, realize it's time to move on, and he's getting new stimulus, he's making improvements. And I guess what's next is just seeing how he gets on today. Gets on in this championship, because if he can start adding medals to his kind of his CV, then yeah, he's gonna be one to watch in the summer.
Agreed. And also I just think it's credit to Ellen, like what she's done with Hannah Nuttall and Westy, and now Koskaran as well. I look at it and I'm like, I think she's a seriously underrated coach. Because
even McGeehan, like, I know obviously she'd been working with Steve Vernon for a long time prior to the season, but the season she really kind of broke out, she was still working with Helen. She's working with Helen Clitheroe for that year. So like maybe you could argue like from a long-term training perspective, it was still Steve Vernon's training, but she was being guided through the races, and Helen was the one going to the races with her and talking to her pre-race and going through all that, which is just as important as kind of the like your plan for the year. Like
I actually think it's more the relationship. You know, the way you communicate with your athlete is probably more important than the program itself. Because that's, you know, that's where you start to impact the athlete's mindset and their kind of mental state around the sport and around performing. So, yeah, I think, I mean, potentially a lot of people do rate her. I mean, so perhaps saying she's underrated is a bit disrespectful, but you know, I think
not underrated, but I don't think she gets that much. I don't mean that there's that much hype around.
Get that much, I don't think she gets enough praise. Like, what? And depending on how the next few years go, but she's got a seriously good crop of athletes, and if Westy and Nuttall continue to progress in this country, she could arguably be dealing with, you know, our two best 5,000 meter runners for the next few years, and they're already slowly proving they are.
Yeah,
in a kind of championship style race and how they develop. So, and then obviously Koskaren, Elise Dorna, Rachel McGeehan as well, doing great things. And again, you'll learn from that through Koskaren, who's obviously in the setup and a great guy. And I hope our Irish listeners enjoy.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for listening, guys. Hope you're enjoying or enjoyed the European champs. Enjoy this one with Koskaren, and we'll catch you very soon.
Welcome, everybody. Andrew Koskaren on the podcast this week. 5 times Irish national record holder. We were just talking off air, actually, what counts as a national record now, whether that 1500 en route to the mile, and obviously he's got many indoor and outdoor records. So, I mean, mates, perhaps a good place to start would actually be, do you have a favourite out of all those national records you've now got? Do you have a favourite?
Yeah, thanks a million for getting me on the podcast. I really appreciate it. I think it's been in the works for a while. So, yeah, I'm chuffed to be on the podcast now. Yeah, I think the mile has definitely been one I've been eyeing up for a long time. Like, I think that was probably the mile indoors, and then probably the 3K outdoors were probably the two that I kind of would recognize as the two most difficult. So I think getting that mile indoors, I think that's probably my favorite at the moment.
Did you exchange any words with Eamon Coughlin on after Muirs?
Yeah, do you know, it was actually brilliant. So Eamon had the indoor record and Ray had the outdoor record. So it was obviously Ray Flynn's meet. So he was there. And then Eamon, I think, was at the meet being recognised for some of his past achievements. So as soon as I finished up the race, the two lads were there and we went over and we got a photo together. We got a photo with the time on the board. And like, yeah, it was class. Like and in fairness, like, they're two absolute gents. Like, they came over, congratulated me, like, they were loving it. So yeah, it was, and they're two absolute legends in Irish sport. So like, it was class even having them there on the day.
I was having a conversation with someone the other day about, does it put into perspective actually how fast they were running, you know, back then? Because modern day tech, tracks, super shoes, everything, and we do see loads of fast times. But yeah, like I said, you know, they were running sub 350 many, many moons ago.
I know, like, I think, yeah, we obviously have the new spikes nowadays, and I think training methods have kind of been refined over the last couple of years. That's definitely made a difference. Like, and they were running on a shorter track, and when Eamon ran that record, that was a world record at the time. So like, that's where it was at. And obviously it's 3:45 now, so it's kicked on a lot since then. So like, when they ran that back in the day, like, it was the best of the best. So I think things have changed a little bit now, so you kind of take those times with a pinch of salt, but it's still difficult to run that fast. So I'm still delighted to be able to like take that record. But I think, yeah, when I'm chatting there with like Eamon, and like, I'm just like, just Eamon, what would you have ran if you were wearing the spikes back in the day? And he's like holding back, you know, he kind of wants to say, yeah, 3:45 easy, but he didn't say that. But I think that would be a bit more realistic if he was around nowadays. That would be the time you would expect he would have ran.
It's a fair point. I mean, did you exchange training notes? I wonder what he was doing to get to a 3:49 versus what you're doing now.
Yeah, I think it's probably not a whole lot different. I think nowadays. People just, I suppose, train maybe a little bit easier. They're a little bit more sensible. I think it's, listening to the body a bit more, like paying attention to how you feel. And like, I suppose everyone's going on about the lactates and the heart rates and everything nowadays. And I think they're actually quite helpful. So it's just a way of like making sure you don't train too hard. Whereas like those guys back in the day, like, they just run hard every single day. Like, you chat to them about the training and like, they're getting injured a lot, you know? But like, it was high risk, high rewards. Like, obviously, Eamon ran a world record, so it paid off for him. But I think we tend to be a little bit more sensible nowadays, so that, I think that is a little bit of the difference.
And then before we move on, do you ever stop and just think about, you know, how many Irish records you actually have? And like, you know, you're the fastest man ever to come out of Ireland across what, the 15 indoors and out, the mile, the 3K as well, and I think you've got the 5K indoor national record as well, haven't you? It's staggering. Do you ever just stop and deep that?
Yeah, do you know what? There's some talented lads coming up through the ranks, so I don't know how long those records are going to actually stick around for. Like, I definitely thought the 5K indoors this year would go. I thought there's a couple of really talented guys coming through the ranks. I thought, like, so it's 13-12, so I thought there'd be a couple of guys who get under the 13-10 barrier. And then, like, yeah, like, I think the mile, hopefully that'll stick around for a while. The 1500, there's a couple of really good guys at the moment. So, like, you don't know how long they're going to stick around for it, you know. But it is class at the moment to say that I have a few records on the books, like, but I'm going to cherish it while I can.
Yeah. Yeah, they might be on borrowed time, but I'm sure you've got a bit of time to improve on them as well. Let's rewind and let's go to the backstory of yourself. Obviously, you know, grew up in Ireland, but you did get that American scholarship to FSU. And it's kind of, is it a bit of a good, the bad and the ugly of the NCAA, that story? Talk us through your time out there, how it came about, but then obviously why you chose to, pretty certain you called your time out there early, didn't you?
Yeah, so I basically just viewed America as the next progression when I went over there. It's like, yeah. I want to make the jump up to the next level. And I got over there and, like, yeah, I just found the training didn't really work for me. Like, it was a good setup, and I think looking back, maybe I would have explored my options a little bit more and, like, maybe went on to another college. But, like, I think I learned a lot when I was there. I learned a lot of good things there. I met a lot of really cool people when I was there. But, yeah, I finished out the year over there and then decided not to go back. Yeah, like, I think it was a good experience. I wouldn't change anything, really, except for, yeah, maybe if the only thing I would change, maybe explored options after that year. But then I was lucky enough to find a good setup in Ireland, so I suppose I wouldn't change anything.
It's difficult when you go over there. Was it fair to say you probably just put that, you know, your college experience in that college program, and then you generalized, you know, you were like, ah, this is what every college, every uni must be like?
Yeah, I think so. Well, I think there was two Irish guys that went to FSU before I went there. So I thought that was a good route. And you know what? It is a good college. I'm not going to say, like, it's definitely a good college. It just didn't suit me personally. I had a coach before I went over, Brendan Mead, who kind of coached me from when I was 16 upwards, and he was really, really good, and just how we approached things was a lot different than what I got over in the States. And I just think it suited me a lot more. But I think, yeah, what you said there, it's like, I don't think all of the American systems are exactly the same. I think there's variation among the different colleges, and I think you need to try and pick a college that suits an individual athlete. And maybe that one just wasn't for me. So maybe if I tried a different one, it might have been a little bit different, but who knows?
Throughout this whole time, your drive is there to get to what level? Had you been thinking about the Olympic Games? Had you been thinking about Irish records? Because obviously, yeah, there was a reason why you came back and you wanted to pursue a slightly different career when it comes to training and your setup.
Yeah, like, I think for me, it's the bar just keeps getting moved. I think it's like when I first started in the sport, it was always just like, be the best and maybe like an Irish level. And then at the time, who was running Ireland, just try to beat them. And then the next step up is trying to make a Europeans. And then it's trying to get a few Irish records. And like, I think now, like, the post just keeps getting moved up. And I suppose, yeah, I just need to tick off and maybe potentially European medals or world finals, I think, is probably the next progression for me. So that's hopefully what I can aim for in the next couple of years.
Mate, you talk about your bar moving on, and obviously there's always another goal for yourself, but is it frustrating being an athlete where you've almost got a perfect record of improving, you know, let's say your 1500 time every single year, and you're getting faster and faster, you're eclipsing national records, but yet the world bar is also kind of moving with you? Is that so, you know, in your heads at the start of the season, you're probably like, right, if I go run 330, I'm going to be much closer to the top. But then X amount of guys go and run 330 as well, or 329. Is that frustrating? I'm wondering how athletes kind of your level right now cope with the fact that at the top, they're also getting faster and faster and faster. So that progression you're making is kind of almost cancelled out.
Do you know what? Like, that's why we're in a bit of a recalibration phase at the moment in terms of times. So I think you run a time, you got to take it with a bit of a pinch of salt. I think a perfect example of that is the Millrose Games. Like, there was eight of us that ran under 350 for the mile. And it just, like, that would not have happened in the past. So I think it's more where you place in races. I think that's kind of got to be the judgment of where you're at. So, like, say, for example, Millrose, like, 349 for me, I was happy with the time, but finishing seventh, I wasn't particularly happy with that. And I think that's the best judge of performance. So, like, yeah, you go to a Europeans and it's where do you finish at that champs. And that's actually the best place to judge where you're at, I suppose, because it's raw. Like, the times don't really matter when you're there. You just hold on to the pace, you stay in the mix, and wherever you finish it is how good you are. And so that's, I suppose, how I try to judge myself.
So right now in training, What are you focused on? Running fast? Because that was a question I was going to ask you. Like, as an athlete of your level, with the stand, you know, the world standards, Olympic standards getting so much harder and harder, you know, you and your coach, when you bump heads, are you focused on boxing off X time at the start of the season? Or is it kind of X result? Yeah, top five at Europeans, medal at Europeans, etc.
Yeah, like that's the hard thing as an athlete. I think it's, you can't just peak for one particular race. I think you gotta try and aim for the standard. Generally, if you're in a good position where you're aiming to go for a medal, I think running the standard isn't probably well within your grasp. So I think that was the case this year for me. Like I ran the time, and we didn't have to peak for a particular race to run that time. So that was great. But yeah, you got to have those in the back of your head and plan it throughout the season. So like we went to Flagstaff in January and we did 4 weeks up there. And the plan was to kind of build a bit of fitness. But at the end of the camp, it's tick the box and get your standards. So like, I think in the back of my mind, it's like, you got to tick the box for European indoors, world indoors, and then for world outdoors as well. So in the mile at Millrose, I ticked all three of them in one go. And then in 3K the week before at the New Balance Grand Prix, I got the 3K and ticked the box for the European indoors and the world indoors. So you're kind of targeting races that you can kind of pick up these, like you can pick up your time as you go, but it needs to be like in a progression of training where you're not like at the top of your game, and then you want to be able to peak them when the champs comes around. So it's a bit of a catch-22. And I think when you're a younger athlete, I think generally what happens is you end up peaking to try and get the time, and then when you get to the champs, you're not at your best. But I think I'm at a time now where hopefully I can get the standard in my stride and then peak then when I get to the championships.
Is it difficult not to look at 7:30, which was a very impressive run and the win in a 3:49 mile, and think, out, you know, I must be pretty close to my peak.
Yeah.
Where have you got to go? You know, since, you know, that's what was Miro's, maybe 4 weeks pre-Euros or 3 weeks, you know, where do you go then?
Yeah, do you know what? It's more of, I suppose, we kind of focus more on like speed endurance sessions now. So that was kind of more dawn of fitness training. So now we kind of focus on more maybe, we're going to run a 3K, so we might do a bit more like 1500 meter specific sessions where we're working at a bit more speed and a bit more turnover. So I suppose it's kind of like switching the nervous system on so you can kind of react in race situations. It's not, I don't think you can kind of say peaking is necessarily specifically just for a time. It's kind of peaking more to be ready for the race that's going to be run at the major championships. So yeah, you're just ready to react to situations. Maybe you're able to close a little bit faster at the end of the race. So it's just like fine tuning those sort of things, I suppose, when I'm talking about peaking. I'm not going to say now I'm going to go and run way faster than I ran, because I'm delighted with the time, but like it's just, yeah, it's switching the body on in the right areas.
New Balance Grand Prix, that was a very, very impressive run. And you talk about, you know, a lot of athletes have come out and said, you know, they're running these incredibly fast times off of, you know, and you even mentioned then off of a quite general fitness, you know, aerobic base. How has kind of what you've learned in the sport over the last 3-4 years with your various, you know, coaches, Valum and Nick Badeau, sort of changed your approach to getting in sort of race shape?
Yeah, like the thing is, like I've been with a good few coaches over the last couple of years, and like you learn a lot as you go. And I think the main takeaway is like you got to train hard to be good, but it's about like what you don't do, that where you pull things back is actually the most important thing. So like you got to pick your days, you pick your battles where like you feel really, really good. You can gain a little bit of fitness here and there, but it's when you don't feel good, if you wake up and you're, say, your morning heart rate's through the roof, pull things back a little bit, just being sensible at the right times. I think that has been a big difference for me, I think, in the last couple of months, or maybe in the last couple of years. Like now, I think as you go, you get just a bit more sensible. And I think you know what you need and what you don't need. I think you try to fine tune, say, the training. I think, like, say, for example, like I think getting obsessed with mileage, I think there's a certain point where you're hitting optimal mileage, and I think you just get obsessed with that and you can kind of go over. So for me, I suppose, like, I think 100 miles a week is kind of like a really, really good zone. And in the past, I've kind of pushed up to 110, 120 miles a week at times to try to get more gains. And it's a point of where I actually don't get any more benefit doing that. Whereas I think the 100 miles a week is enough fitness for me. And then it actually, if I run too much, then it takes away from, say, my running mechanics, or say some of the speed stuff we're going to do, or like even in the gym, kind of creating a bit of power. I think you take that energy and you put it into mileage, you're sacrificed it in those other areas. So it's about knowing exactly how much you need to do in every single area, and just trusting that you know that's enough because you've done it before.
Mm. It's a fair point. On your kind of base training then, how many sessions would you have done around CK 3:49 mile. How many sessions did you do and you were like, right, I'm probably in this shape? Or is it a case of just knowing exactly where you are and all this threshold training? And this is what George Mills sort of claims, you know, that he's able to do, that he doesn't really touch on race pace and he can just go and operate at 7:27. So, but I wonder if you do some of those harder sessions.
Yeah. So I think, like, that's the thing with the double threshold nowadays that I think that some people are getting obsessed with. That's a slight bit of an issue. I think it's individual profiles. Like, I think George Mills, he spoke about George Mills there. I think he responds really, really well to just being really, really aerobically fit. And his fitness ceiling seems to be who knows where it is. So he can just keep push in that area. Me personally, like, I've done some double threshold throughout the years. And I think it brings me to a certain point, and then I don't get any better. The better my threshold gets, it doesn't actually make me better on the track. So I think that, yeah, the hard sessions are important. Like, I think I had one in particular up in, so we were training up in Flagstaff in January before I came down around that 3K. I had one session where I just kind of wanted to touch on, the race pace stuff. So the session itself was, there was five sets of 1K 400. And I think, so what we wanted to do, me and Helen kind of discussed before the session, and it was kind of like maybe two of the first sets were kind of just keep them a bit more controlled. So we kind of went like 240, I think it was 240 for the first K, and then it was 57 for the 400. And then the next set was 239 for the K, and then another 57 for the 400. And then, so my last three Ks, I kind of wanted to get close to what I thought I could run in the 3K, which is, I actually had in my head that I kind of wanted to get pretty close to 7:30. So what I wanted to do was try run the last three Ks at 3K race pace, so in 60s. The issue was we were in Cottonwood, so we drive down from Flagstaff, so it's still at like a bit of altitude. So it was kind of like a bit of a task. And like, in my head, I kind of was like, right, I want to hit these 230s, but if I don't hit them, it's not a big issue. It's just the fact that maybe I hit the first one at that race pace, and then it's more like trying to run when I'm fatigued then and try to get as close to that pace and hold the session together without completely imploding. The bit of the issue was we went down there and it was quite cold, so it's quite hard to run 60s when it's cold. So I think, yeah, so the first one I went out and I ran 231, and then I ran a 58, so I was struggling a little bit, and then went 234. And then ran a 58 again, and then went 238, and then went 56 at the end. So I think that last K, I was kind of struggling a little bit. So I think coming off the back of that session, I was like, maybe it's in the legs, but you never fully know. I just kind of wanted to kind of stress the body in that say. I'd say if I did it at sea level, I would have been able to hit the 230s that I was looking for. So, you know, like, do you know what? Like, it's more about stressing the system, I think, than hitting the paces for me. So as long as I'm able to stress the system to that intensity, I was happy going into the race. Yeah,
even just that is quite an impressive session. I've been to Cottonwood, and it is at elevation. It is quite hard there, even though I wasn't crazy fit. But you strike me as someone who is very good at sort of analyzing and evaluating. You know, you mentioned there about you trialed double threshold, you got to a certain level, and then you didn't get much more from it. And each year you kind of have made just constant like tweaks, and even the way you've kind of sort of, I guess, put yourself in situations and opportunities, whether it be getting out to Australia, training under Nick for a period of time, you know, working in with Phelan closely. So let's kind of storyboard a little bit and just go through the last sort of, I guess, 4 years, because you've gained a lot of experience in the last 4 years. Is that fair? Like, since you've been to Tokyo for that first Olympic Games, who you've trained with, where you've trained, and what you've done has probably varied quite drastically year on year.
Yeah, like, I think I've always tried to put myself in a position where I was training with some really, really good guys and trying to learn from them, and then trying to gain experience from as many coaches as possible. So yeah, I think I've been down training with Melbourne Track Club quite a bit, and I really, really like their system. It's really, really good. I've trained, probably done the bulk of my training under Phelan Kelly. I think his beauty is his mindset around training, and Phelan's what he's really, really good at is inspiring lads to go all in on athletics. I think it's quite hard to go all in when I'd say you're not the cream of the crop, and I suppose Phelan's one of those guys who just like any guy comes around and he's like, see, he's selling them to go all in on the sport. So he's like really, really inspirational, and everyone's like, right, I'm quitting my job, I'm going all in. And like, I was definitely at a point of the last couple of years where you're at a crossroads and you're thinking about what to do, and he's a great man at selling you the dream and going, you can be really, really good. And yeah, it's paid off for me to a certain extent. So I think mindset from Phelan through the roof, like a really, really good coach. A lot of other good things as well, but I think that's a superpower. I think Nick's kind of training philosophy that he's developed, I suppose, is his superpower. And yeah, he's a really good coach as well. And then, yeah, now I've graduated from those two systems, and I suppose it's on to the next thing. Like, I just wanted a change of scenery, so came over here and joined New Balance Manchester. And yeah, it's going well so far. I've only been here a couple of months and I've been running pretty well. So yeah, learning more over here. And Helen Clitheroe is an unbelievable coach. So yeah, I love it.
Did you make those decisions yourself? Your point to kind of move out of that, you know, Phelan set up to Nick and then to Nick to Helen, is that kind of you just coming to a realization you're ready for a change?
You
bounce like, off of people.
I'm not saying it's completely myself. Like, I think I'm quite a good person. I have a lot of people in my corner that I will talk to before I make decisions. So like, yeah, I think it's kind of more of a group decision. I'd say obviously the end decision is myself and my gut instinct and what I feel like that I need to do. But I've some unbelievable people in my corner. Like even my first coach, Brendan Mead, I still talk to him all the time. Anytime I'm making a decision, I'll ring him up and like, see what he thinks, and he'll give me some really, really good advice. And like Phelan as well, like I'm still on really good terms with Phelan, so like I'll ring him up and see what he thinks. And like, yeah, I think I've a lot of really, really good people in my corner that help me to make decisions that I need to make.
That's very cool. I think it's needed as well. Is there anyone else, obviously kind of a couple of ex-coaches there, is there anyone else who sort of helps you out and supports you in that corner that you're talking about?
Yeah, like I think one of the guys that I've kind of been training with for the last couple of years, a guy, Paul Robinson, I've spent a lot of time training, running with him. He's kind of been through the sport, he knows a lot, so he's kind of helped me out a lot as time has gone on. I've been massively supported by Richard Donovan, who's kind of helped me, who's funded me throughout, I suppose, before I kind of like signed a contract and everything. So he kind of kept me in the sport as well, he helped me out a lot, so he's really, really guided me through things as well. But yeah, there's a lot of people there that have helped me.
It's so powerful. And yeah, obviously now you are, you know, a part of New Balance Manchester, which for our UK listeners is very exciting. You're training alongside Westy. How's he doing?
He's good. I think he's in good shape. I think he had a bit of a rocky race there in the 5K. I don't think it kind of went the way they were hoping it would go. It was kind of like Grant Fisher was going for the world record. So it's a tough race to be in, you know, when you're there's an A pack and a B pack. So I don't think it kind of went the way he was hoping. But yeah, he's training well, so he'll be back strong.
Yeah, absolutely. And what was the appeal with New Balance Manchester? What was, why, you know, what was so exciting about it that you thought I need to go over there and join?
So yeah, when I was in discussion actually with a couple of different coaches before I came over here, just kind of sussing the ins and outs, and I thought that Helen kind of had a lot of the things that I was looking for in training. So I came over and visited, got along really, really well with the guys on the team. Thought they were absolutely, yeah, really sound, and the training philosophy, I like it. It's really, really good how she goes about things, her mindset around training. It suited the way I wanted to do things. So,
can you open up a little bit on that philosophy, what that looks like?
I think she's quite athlete-driven. I think she's very good at listening to the athletes, how they feel around training. She was a tough competitor herself, so I think she's kind of like around races and stuff, she's like got that hard attitude of go in and get everything done, like, but also kind of that softer side where she's kind of like, will listen to the athletes. And kind of like take a bit of advice or take a bit of adjustment maybe in training from us and stuff. So she'd be quite flexible, I suppose, at like listening. And she has had so much experience herself that she'll talk to us around training. And if she thinks something's right, wrong, whatever, we can have a discussion about it and decide how we want to go about things.
Yeah, because the transition's been so smooth. It's gone really, really well. So I'm wondering what kind of accelerated that transition. There's definitely no kind of lull at any point.
Yeah, like the thing is, like, I think I've always been used to a fitness-based approach to training, and this is another fitness-based approach to training. So it's not a massive difference. Like, we do big aerobic sessions. That's what I've always done. So it's not like we're massively changing the philosophy. Like, it's quite similar to what I've always done, and that's why I don't think there's been any like lull in performance. If anything, I've gotten a little bit better.
And that kind of group dynamic, then, is it just, am I right thinking it's just yourself and Westy on the male side? Part of New Balance Manchester right now. So are you doing everything together, or
we do a lot of training sessions together. Mm-hmm. I think we work quite well together. I think that we're both kind of similar levels of fitness at times, I think, in training. So we work quite well together. Yeah,
we'll move on to just indoors, but then also outdoors. Like, where do you see yourself going this year? What were the chances at Euros, chances at Worlds? Is it going to take something special to medal at Euros?
Yeah, like
could be harder than Worlds.
Yeah, possibly could be. Yeah. Like the standard in Europe at the moment is crazy. Like, and there's actually a possibility, I think, that the world indoors will be.
If less turn up, you know, just thinking that the big names don't turn out.
That's what I think. Yeah. A lot of people, especially the fact that the two champs are so close together, people might pick one or the other. And then the fact that one's in China might just deter people from going to it. So, yeah, it could potentially be weaker. You never know. But it could be.
It's, you're obviously committing to both Euros and Worlds. So what's your reasoning? Because obviously we've heard lots of, you know, justifications around why people don't want to go to Worlds and China. It drags out the indoor season too long. They need to get ready. Grand Slam's around the corner. What's your reasoning of attacking both?
I just think there's two chances of a medal. I think the way I kind of run, like I think like we do a lot of fitness work throughout the year, and I think that's enough to kind of carry me through the indoor seasons. And I don't think I'll lose too much fitness. Like I think that's maybe what people are worried about, is like they'll get to the end of March and they'll have to rebuild again. And I think we do so much mileage as we go throughout the season anyway that I don't think that's going to be a major issue. And there's more medals up for grabs. And I think that's what we're in the sport to do. We're in the sport to compete. So like if there's two championships on, I think I'm going to do them.
Yeah, you talk about mileage. Will you get back up to 100 miles in between both those championships, or keep it a little steadier?
That's the thing. Like, I think it just really depends on how we bounce back off it. 100 miles might be where the body's at. It might not be. So I think you're just going to play it by ear and see where the body's at. And yeah, we might be there if I feel really, really good. If not, then we might do a little bit less. We might go down to 80, or we'll play it by ear.
So you certainly feel it's important to sort of get up to that sort of ballpark figure quite regularly.
The thing is, like, I don't think it's necessarily important to hit certain numbers. I think in the past, that's typically where, say, listening to the body, and that's where I naturally want to go, and I feel that's about right. So, like, as time goes on, I don't think you can have like a fixed template of training to be like, I got to stick to this or I got to stick to that. So I think you got to be flexible. And at times, I think if I go above that, I think in the past it's probably been a little bit too much. That's where I'll start to pull things back a little bit. But yeah, within that 90 to 100 miles of range, I think it's a really good area for me.
As you're developing then into the outdoors, will we see you gravitate towards a 5, or are you going to stick with that 1500 for a few more years? Just thinking ahead to maybe, you know, LA, I guess we're already talking about it. You know, where you see yourself potentially in the next few years.
Do you know what? It's play it by year as well. Like, I think I'll probably run a 5K at the start of the season to see where I'm at, just to test the fitness, and we'll see how that goes. And then if I run really, really well on that, then possibly kick on with a few more 5Ks. But I think at the moment, I think my heart's in the 1500 meters, and I think I've still got more potential there. So I think, yeah, as we're going, I think aiming for the World Outdoor Championships, we'll probably aim for the 1500 meters at the moment.
Epic. Well, mate, I think, you know, that wraps it up. We covered a lot of ground in that podcast, so really appreciate you coming on.
Sweet. Thanks a million for having me. No, I really appreciate it.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.